Much as I didn't want to, I forced myself to dive again and locate the professor's partial dental plate. I found it once more down near the drain. Surfacing, I began using it to tap against the side of the vat, the standard Morse code for SOS. Dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. Which, translated into taps, went tap, 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 tap. I repeated it ad nauseum, ad infinitum, tapping and floating, floating and tapping. It wasn't easy either. Tapping out a recognizable Morse code was one thing, but trying to do it at the same time you're treading water was something else altogether. I took breaks doing it. I managed short cat naps, and one time actually fell asleep long enough to forget where I was when I awoke, an especially unpleasant awakening. Minutes piled up, hours accumulated. Over my head, through the skylight, nighttime now reigned. A few stars were faintly visible. Other than that, nothing was altered, nothing new to see. It was maddening to realize that the whole big, wide world was still going on right outside these walls, and yet here I was stuck inside this living tomb. I realized my mental state was beginning to deteriorate. I became more maudlin, more like what Blackwell had said about Monica, emotionally unhinged. I spent a fair amount of time pitying myself for my sorry state of affairs. I also found myself thinking a great deal about Professor Hawkman, and pitying him, too. It seemed so unfair that he had had his life rug pulled out from under him like that, not only to have his murder forever labeled a suicide, but to have been denied his Nobel Prize and robbed of his place in history. It seemed so cruel, so unjust. Never having met the man, I nevertheless felt a kinship springing up between us. Not only were we sharing an identical fate, I felt certain that somehow he was keeping me company, helping me all he could, helping even beyond lending me his dental plate as a bell clapper. I had to hope so, because I couldn't count on anyone else coming to my rescue. Who but Blackwell knew I was here? And there was what Joey had said about the bottling plant being shut down until New Year's. By then, I'd be broth. More time passed. My hunger and thirst increased, and I used the cola to satisfy both as best it could. My mind began to drift more and more, and my mood swings to swing wildly. I experienced more episodes of self-pity, combined with bouts of nostalgia. I thought about my alma mater and felt remorse that I had squandered virtually an entire semester by choosing to run off to go surfing Hawaii. Then the mood swung back the other way, and I was forced to confront the fact that I was apparently destined to die young in this lonely vat. I began regretting that I hadn't run off to Hawaii sooner, skipping high school altogether. If I had known it was all going to come to this, I probably would have. I thought about loved ones people I was never going to see again. I tried imagining where they were right at this moment. Lonnie Kim, attending class at Hawaii Pacific U. Aunt Ruth in Gardner, Mass., doing needlework or else knitting me another sweater. Probably Argyle. Sigh. Hilda, her cook, waiting for me to show up so she could cook me my favorite meals. And Zeus, waiting patiently for me to arrive so I could toss him the frisbee and we could sit together on the bench in Aunt Ruth's garden. And there was Uncle Frank, possibly still at work at Boston Police Headquarters, solving crimes. Not one of them had the slightest inkling that at this very moment I was in a vat of soda pop somewhere in New York City, about to be dissolved to death. How could they? And what about Zeke Roberts, or my faculty advisor, Professor Hopkins, or Detective Lippincott, or even Dean Simmons? Did any of them know? Did any of them have an inkling? No, and no reason that they should. The only person I could expect to receive any help from at all was Blackwell himself, a sick, delusional madman who saw himself not only as king of the forest, but as a master chess manipulator who believed he was perfectly entitled to treat other people as pawns and sacrifice them accordingly. He was the sole person on whom rested my flimsy hope of deliverance. I had to hope that some trace of conscience still remained, that he was wrestling with it now, and that eventually it would win out, and I would receive a full pardon, not just my present stay of execution. I stopped tapping and lifted my head out of the syrupy liquid. I shook my ears to clear them and listen for new sounds. Nothing. Nada. Not even the sound of a jet passing overhead. Like a raccoon, I licked my fingers and used my saliva to wipe my eyelashes so they wouldn't stick together each time I blinked. My hair felt as if someone had emptied a can of hairspray on it. All of a sudden, my awareness shifted from inside the vat to outside in the room. Was it my imagination? Or had I just heard something?